This is part two of a Bible teaching by David Ebal titled God Speaks Twice.
I had a lot of trouble with this when I was in Sunday school. Him shalt thou set by himself, likewise everyone that boweth upon his knees to drink. Set the other guy on the other side. Till I found out it was this way. That those who ran to the water and fell on their hands and knees and put their face and mouth in the water were to be put on one side. And those who, with their head up, looking around, took their hand into the water and then lapped the water out of their hand in an awareness method or mood were set on another side. Though it, you know, it's not quite so clear in this King James idea. That's the concept. And there were only 300 who approached it with the constant awareness, or I might say, lack of trust, watching out for everybody else, keeping their eyes open and looking around. And the Lord said to Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you and deliver the Midianites into thine hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place. Now, if I was Gideon, that'd be hard. Come on, God. A little while ago, at least, each of us only had to get 1 to 3, or 1 to 4 at the most. You know, the soldiers. Now, the ratio is terrible. And God's making it harder and harder and harder. But do you know the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 10:13, there hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that you're able to bear it. Now this says to me, not only in the realm of temptation, but also in the realm of testing, that God will build us up step by step and not test us in any realm more than we're able to bear. Does that say that to you? Do you see the basic idea? So God didn't start him with such a hard thing of sending 32,000 down to 300. He started him with a simple visit and a couple of pancakes and a pot of soup and began to deal with him more and more and more and more. Does this speak to you the way God deals with you in the same way and manner? We had moved to Akron, Ohio. Preacher called me up on the telephone. It was about 2 or 3 in the morning. Brother Ebal, he said. I had to think for a minute to find out whether I was Brother Ebal. Yeah. He says, oh, praise the Lord, hallelujah. And he went into one of those, you know, Pentecostal spiels. And then he said, God has just shown me. Well, first he described the new church that they're building. The Lord told him to build a church. And the Lord just showed him that I was going to send him $2,000. Well, yeah, he was way down in Kentucky. I was up in Ohio. And I was going to send him $2,000 for building this church. Well, brother, do you understand that when I say I just didn't get to witness? Now, God's not mealy-mouthed. And I think that if God wanted me to send him $2,000... God could have found some ways to let me know other than through the guy that was going to get the $2,000. But how many of us know an awful lot of preachers prophesy that you're to give them the money and that you're to benefit them? And they scare you so that you think that if you don't respond immediately, something bad's going to happen. Why, back in the hills of Pennsylvania, we call that a hex. Putting a hex on somebody, making them think something bad's going to happen because they're not doing what we tell them. I'm not trying to find fault with prophets because there are prophets in the land. But I want you to hear me. It's all right to ask God for a confirmation. And if God's going to ask you for $2,000, it's my personal opinion he would have started out with 10 a few years before and moved it to 50 and then 500 before he asked for the 2,000. Can you follow what I'm driving at? In my case, he had asked for the 50. We were pretty heavy tithers then. But another way I knew that God hadn't spoken to him is because I didn't even have $2,000. The preacher had heard that I just sold my house in Kentucky. I expect that's where he thought I got my $2,000. Am I speaking to anybody here tonight? Are you hearing? How many of you have had not that kind of, but similar kind of things go on? Let's see your hands. Let raise them. All right, there's half the people. So the other half, you can just count yourself blessed and bide your time. Oh, where'd I leave? What verse? And it came to pass the same night, the Lord said unto him, Arise, get thee down to the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. But watch it. Now God is even building his in. If you're still afraid, go down with Phurah, thy servant, down to the host. And thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down to the host. Then went he down with Phurah, his servant, to the outside of the armed men that were in the host. Now, when I was in Sunday school years ago, I couldn't understand this. But what I didn't know was that they weren't wearing uniforms, blue and gray. They all looked the same. When we were over there and we saw the Arabs, did they all look the same? In fact, it was hard to tell one camel driver from another. And they all were pretty much the same. So back then with no... You know, I used to wonder, in the Bible it said they turned on each other. And some of the armies would turn on each other, you know, begin to fight each other. I wonder, why'd they do that? I figured out, well, it was because they were all talking the same language. They all looked the same and they didn't know who was your friend. Maybe that's why we bought them uniforms. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and the camels were without numbers, the sand by the side of the sea for multitude. When Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, Behold, I've dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came into the tent, and smote it that it fell, and overturned it. And the tent lay along, and his fellow answered and said, This is nothing else, save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, for unto his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. And it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped. Well, I think I'd have to worship too on that one myself, if that happened. Returned to the host of Israel and said, Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. Well, I think I'll stop reading here right now and just tell the story, because I think you're familiar with it enough to get most of the detail by now. So they all surrounded the Midianites, and Gideon placed in one hand the trumpet. The other hand contained a firebrand or torch, but the torch was surrounded by a pitcher. And on Gideon's command, he blew the trumpet, and they all blew their trumpets. Then he cracked his pitcher and the light began to shine. And then they began to cry, all with one giant voice, as they surrounded the camp of the Midianites, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." Well, I don't know about you, but if I was wakened from a nice, quiet sleep, and I thought for sure that I was going to go in there and wipe up and mop up that gang, I had all these guys with me, then all of a sudden I hear all this clamor, trumpets blowing, and everywhere I look, there's a torch. And of course, a torch makes you think there must be at least 1,000 guys with each torch. And trumpets and carrying on, and everywhere I look, there they are. Well, you got the picture. Well, these guys jumped up and they began to run. And who did they run into? Other Arabs. Well, now if one Arab runs into the other Arab and his sword is drawn, what happens? A fight starts. And that's exactly what it said. And they turned on each other until they had just all beat each other up. And the poor guys... There was a mess. I've noticed as I read the Bible that in every case when there's a fight, the Arabs turn against the Arabs because they can't decide who's boss. They're always fighting. Nasser fought Hussein. Hussein is fighting, what's the other guy up there in Lebanon now? No, the guy in Lebanon. You ought to know that, Mary. Who's in... No? Come on. Well, anyway. No, Arafat is the Jordanese commando guy. Yeah, Christian Democrat in Lebanon. Well, anyway, they're always arguing about who's going to be boss, but at least Israel decided who the boss was. And in every case, they had a boss, they had a general, but these other guys couldn't make up their mind. And I'm not against Arabs. It's just that's the way all the stories end up. And of course, I believe that's what's going to happen again, don't you? Eventually, the same basic idea. But you know something, so that there's no misunderstanding, eventually it says that Egypt, a third of all of God's blessings will be on Egypt in the end time. And the Arabs, especially Lebanon, I was amazed at how much prosperity and peace is prophesied for Lebanon. So it's just a matter until it all gets straightened around. Then it'll be all right again. I want to go back to the concept now of this Thamite for just a minute. God does call us at times to proceed in our own might. There are times when you have to spend your own money. I remember the first time I was called upon by God to do anything outside of my religious denomination, and it was a very hard thing. The year was 1964, and there was a big full gospel convention over in Philadelphia. We felt anointed to go over there. Nowadays, it's just a normal thing, but back then, the idea of packing up a car, the family, taking $300, going to a hotel, expenses. Back then, we even hired a young lady to travel with us and be the babysitter. That's when I was rich. Well, anyway, there is a time when you got to spend your own money, right? You don't know for sure where you're headed and what it's going to amount to. As a result of that trip, I met some people and came through Harrisburg, and one thing led to another, and after a while I was working here. If we hadn't have spent the money to go to the full gospel convention in Philadelphia, I'd have never met the people at AMP and would have been here. So I have to connect a lot of our blessings with just having to proceed in your own might at first. You follow that kind of thing. Now, the reason I'm saying this is there are those every once in a while, and four people in Harrisburg at one time, not four in Harrisburg, but four in Pennsylvania, decided to leave their jobs like I did, and then God would bless them like He did. But it didn't work. And what I'm trying to get at is that there are times when you got a message, you have to proceed in your own might first. And God just demands it. And some of my friends thought, well, I'll just quit working and God will start paying my bills. But what they didn't know was all those other years when I was doing the thing for God in my own might, paying my own bills. Can you follow this logic? Now, I don't want anyone to think that I'm lifting myself up tonight. I'm only using this as an example of what I'm trying to get across. You see what I'm driving at as an example? Because, well, over the years, those who've known us realize that we just don't usually use ourselves as examples. In fact, you've heard me say, don't do like I do like I say. Because we aren't an example for anybody. But in this realm, I'm trying to get across that it is necessary at times to use your own resources. Now, in this realm, I've got to say something, and one of these days I think I'll make a lesson on it. I haven't gone through all the research, but the lesson's on tithing and on the tithe. As you know, God says, bring all the tithes into my storehouse. Is that correct? Presents, offerings, so forth. But did you know that's Old Testament? And we believe not in the gospel of the circumcision, but in the gospel of the... Well, if we're in the gospel of the uncircumcision, then we're not under the law of the tithe. Now, everything we own belongs to God. It used to be we could get away with a 10% offering. Now, everything we own is not what we give to God, it's what we keep for ourselves. Are you following this logic? However, I want to go back to the Old Testament for just a minute because it's commonly taught that we should give the church our tithe. But that's not right even in the Old Testament. The Old Testament says, bring your tithe to the storehouse. Now, I checked this out. And the storehouse is not the church. The storehouse is where you're fed. And when you bring your tithe to the storehouse, you actually take your animal to the butcher shop. And the priest butchers your animal, and you are commanded to eat of that animal. Certain portions. The various kinds of tithes. Somebody nod their head who knows I'm telling the truth. You're commanded to partake of your own tithe. So for this reason, we believe that it's wise today to teach Christians that part of their tithe money should go for books, tapes, and other things that you would eat of.
Babysitters.
Oh, babysitters. Or whatever else is necessary for you to receive some kind of a soul benefit because you're commanded to eat of your tithe. You see what I'm driving at here? Now, naturally, this is not normally taught. This concept of tithing. Has anyone ever heard anybody teach this concept of tithing before? I'll give a chapter and verse later on it. But it's true. It is true. The tithe is to be partaken of. You're commanded to partake of some of that yourself. Because, you know something? There are some people who wouldn't buy a religious book until you meet them. And some of us are so tight. I'm amazed, you know. Now, some people are real loose, but some people are so tight that it takes God to command them to get some materials for their own blessing and benefit. Come on now. Some people just don't know enough about God that they'd rather spend their money on hamburgers. We feel one of the best blessings, something that's blessed us tremendously in our life has been our record player and good Christian music. And so we're convinced that when you're in a downer, in fact, there are times when Betty comes in and after I bark a few times, then she goes back to the front room and she turns on the record player. Says music calms the savage beast. So I thought that was a pretty good idea, so now I turn on the record player. But she taught me. But it's a good thing. What we... Music is a bridge between soul and spirit. This was given to me in prophecy a while back. This would be good for you to know, Jim. Music is the bridge between soul and spirit. It helps the people cross out of the soul into the spiritual realm. That's one reason we need good music in our spiritual worship services. Some people at times have said to me, Brother Ebel, why don't you have prayer? Why don't you have worship in your services? Number one, this is not a service. We didn't come here for a service tonight. We came here for a what? A Bible study. We expected to have a Bible study. That's why we got these kind of chairs, and this is not a service. If we were going to have a service, we'd start out with worship. Songs, melody, singing, making melody in your heart for the Lord. Psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. We know enough about that, but this is not a worship service. This is a Bible study, you see. And one other thing that we tried to do a while back, and I don't want anyone to miss, I don't want to swing the pendulum so far that it goes too far, but we discouraged, I mean, I'll admit it, we discouraged prayer requests. Now, when prayer requests came, we honored them, but we didn't make a time of saying, now, what, do you know what I'm talking about? Why? Because this is not a prayer meeting. This is a what? A Bible study. And when people came at first, what, 9 years ago, they expected to also have some songs and some prayer and go the old route. You know what I'm talking about. And we had those situations back then, but we're kind of out of it now. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to sing a song here, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to pray for someone's specific request, especially if there's anyone who has a strong, you know, discomfort in the physical body that causes a problem that they cannot study their lesson. We always want to pray for that to get rid of that right away. But we, in a general sense, would rather their prayer request for your uncle or something like that be handled, you know, in a way that's designed for that. Is that okay? And so we're not finding fault with it. It's just that we're not putting on a service. You can't start a Bible study on your own, brother. We've seen it. We've seen people try, and it will not work. It just, or any other thing, right? I'm relating to Bible study because that's what we're doing here, but well, it comes to anything, doesn't it? It won't work. Not until there's an obvious command of the Lord, right? But you have to do a lot of the work yourself.
Please stop your machine and turn this cassette over.